I believe that people think that if they're not performing their potential, then there's something we're missing. There's something that we're not getting. But the opposite is actually quite true, because the biggest danger to achieving our potential is not something we're missing. Because if there's something we're not getting, if there's something we're missing, we continue to search, we continue to question, we continue to read, we continue to listen. And so the biggest danger to achieving our potential is not something we don't know. The biggest danger to achieving our potential is what we know for sure. Because at that point, that's the point where we shut down our thought processes and move on to something else, rather than continuing to dig deeply toward the foundation of a subject.
Welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
And I'm your co-host, David Rethemeyer.
And David, it is Christmas. At the very least, it's cold where we are in Virginia. And I know I just got back from Chicago and Grand Rapids, and I know we don't do cold the same and we don't do snow the same. And I discovered that when I was up there, but it's cold. Like, it was 4 degrees when I got up this morning. And for Virginia, that's cold. Stinks in our houses. At least my house breaks when it gets that cold. And so it's chilly. In fact, it's so cold, I'm wearing, David, my new heated vest. I finally got into the heated vest world. Yeah, and I'm like spoiled. I'm not sure if I'm ever going to wear a regular vest again in winter. But this morning I had to haul some wood, and I definitely put the heated vest to use. And so it's cold, but it's also Christmas. And not so much because of the cold, but because of Christmas, David and I are taking just a little break to do some other things and to spend some time with our family and friends. And we hope that you get to do the same. But we didn't want you to have your break without the Be Unbound podcast. And so what we decided to do, that would just be too sad. So what we decided to do is to run some episodes that are our favorites and some of the most popular ones that we've had over the last few years. And if you heard them before, we hope that they help you again. And if you never heard them, well, we'd like to introduce you to some old friends and bring back some episodes that we had from the past that people really enjoyed, in the hopes that you would enjoy them again or enjoy them for the first time. So, David, who do we have on today?
Today, we are joined by best-selling author Andy Andrews, who, as Jonathan will explain in detail in the actual episode, has actually had a lot of influence on how we have gone about teaching in Unbound, and some of our core values and models have come from his teaching. And I think in this episode, he shares some really interesting insights into how he got his start into his career and how he went from living under a peer to being a best-selling author, and all the way to some of the really exciting projects that you should definitely check out for yourself. So this episode has a lot of really interesting things in on it, so we hope you enjoy it.
Well, welcome, Andy. We talk about the fact that sometimes we have people who are extraordinary at ordinary things on the podcast, but this time we have somebody who, no, I think I would be okay calling you extraordinary. So we really are delighted to have you here. And welcome to the Be Unbound podcast. We're delighted to have you on, and thanks for making the time for us today.
Thank you, buddy. I'm honored to be here. I'm really a great admirer of you and the work you do. And so just honored to have the time to spend with you.
Well, Andy, I was thinking the other day, I listened to a podcast that you did on your Professional Noticer podcast, and you said a bunch of things, and I got done, and I thought, now, did I agree with everything that he just said because I thought of it and he agreed with me, or did I agree with it because Andy already said it and heard it, and that's why I thought of it in the first place? And it's probably the latter. So I tell people there's an awful lot of Professional Noticer Andy Andrews influence in Unbound, and I told Andy the first time I met him, I said, you have a big impact on an organization you don't even know exists. Many years ago, I have a dear friend, Dean Showalter, and I'll say his name because he probably listens to the podcast and he should get some credit for this. He introduced me to your podcast. And I listened to that, and that was the first I heard of you. So I went out and I got some of your books. And then, I'm a big library guy, so I got some of them from the library. And then I went and bought all of them. So I don't always do that, Andy. So I think I own everything that you've got published, and at least one that was out of print. I got Return to Sergeant Springs. I had to get it off of a used shelf somewhere and read those. And it has been a major influence on my thinking, on the way I sort of approach things. And that has definitely crept into some of Unbound. So it's really cool to have you here as kind of in a strange way, first time podcast appearance, but you're kind of a legacy guest for us in terms of your thinking. So it's fun to have you on the show.
Wow. That is very awesome. I need you to call my wife and Tell her that. Tell her, see, I'm pretty decent.
Yeah. And anytime you need a little boost like that, you just let us know and we'll do that. So,
well, no, I appreciate the kind words.
You have an awesome title, Andy. You call your podcast The Professional Noticer and you call yourself The Professional Noticer. And I think that's a really neat title. I think it's actually accurate as well. But for our audience, why are you The Professional Noticer? How did you get to become The Professional Noticer, Andy?
Well, I was schooled by the original noticer, and I wrote a book called The Noticer, and it's about an old man that I met when I was really homeless. I was about 20 years old, and my parents had died when I was 19, and I was living under a pier on the Gulf Coast, and I met this old guy late one night under my pier, scared me to death. We called him Jones, not Mr. Jones, just Jones, and we had seen him in and out of town, and we didn't really know where he went when he left town. We didn't know where he stayed when he was in town. But he was the first person I ever had who kind of told me the truth about myself and pulled no punches and smiled while he talked. And he called himself a noticer. He said, you know, when God was passing out talents, I didn't get the cool ones. I can't run fast. I can't sing great. But I notice little things that make a difference in people's lives. And so that really inspired me to become a noticer myself. And I work with a lot of companies and teams around the country and a lot of school systems. And so I've taken on that, you know, they've said, well, you're like a noticer. I said, well, I'm not like the original noticer. So they're like, yeah, but you're a professional noticer. You make your living doing it. I'm like, well, okay, all right. And so when it came time to name the podcast, that's what we did, The Professional Noticer.
That's neat. I love the story. I should just commend here, you know, you should read The Noticer and then the sequels that came afterwards, just because there are some more of the stories there. And those are fascinating books. I'm curious, Andy, you know, there's obviously a gap between Jones comes along, you move from the pier, right? For the record, Andy's no longer living underneath the pier. And then you do some things, and then you get to a point where you're an in-demand person in a couple of really interesting ways. You're a professional speaker, you're an entertainer, and then you're an author, you're a consultant, those kinds of things. I've always been interested in the gap there. What were some of the steps, you know, where you went from like living under a pier to like, I can notice things and the things I notice people want to hear about. I'm kind of curious what that, I don't know, that training process or maybe that sort of evolvement, how did that happen?
Yeah, that is a curious story because, you know, when I was a little kid, I had that talking gene. I had that, you know, I was the kid that the teacher would always say, you know, we love Andy, but he just won't shut up. And I was a thinker. I thought parallel. You know, my mom would always say, you know, don't play with that stick. It'll poke your eye out. And I'm 6 years old, and I'm thinking, you can't poke your eye out with a stick. You can poke it in, poke it out. You got to run it up through your nose, up like this. And so I would see the same things everybody saw and hear the same things everybody heard, but it would just mean something different to me. And so when life went on and I didn't know what I was going to do when I grew up, but when my parents died, I ended up under the pier and met Jones. He started me reading. You know, I had really always been a Sports Illustrated Field and Stream kind of person, but he started me reading real books and specifically biographies. And I ended up reading over 200 biographies of these happy, influential, great people. You know, and when I say great people, I always think, do they do biographies of any other kind of people? I guess not a loser section.
They're called memoirs, I think.
Probably. But I would read these and I would start to think, you know, what is it about them? How did they turn out like this? Is it something, were they born this way or is it something they did? Because I knew if they were born this way, I was out of luck. But if it was something they did, what did they do and how long did it take them to do it? I identified seven things and I called them things. I didn't know what else to call them. I knew they weren't characteristics. They weren't ideas. They weren't theories. Turned out they were principles. So there were seven principles that these people had employed, some of them on purpose and some of them just kind of arbitrarily. But these people had these seven things in common. And so I started applying these seven things into my life. And that's what really I used to yank myself out from under the pier. Now, obviously, it took some time to apply those things. I have sometimes people will say, we've heard you say anybody can be successful. And do you really believe that? And I'm like, well, yes, I do, because I was that anybody, I was the guy in the ditch, so to speak. But I also know that it doesn't happen immediately. The guy in the ditch can't stand up one day and then run a company. There's a lot of change that has to be involved. And so I was curious about, where did that change? Where do you find that change? Where do you find that good sandpaper that you can rub the rough edges of yourself off with? And that comes with a thinking mindset. And so these seven things, these seven principles became the seven principles that I used. And they became the seven principles that built the story of The Traveler's Gift, which is another book that I wrote. And this, this time in my life, which was several years, really became a time of focusing in on thinking, on really thinking deeply and challenging what I thought. The old man Jones had told me one time, he said, "You can't believe everything you think." And that became a guiding principle in my life. I guess the best way I can explain that is, have you ever known something? I mean, you knew it, you could argue it, and you could win the argument. And then you found out a year later, oh, that wasn't exactly right. Well, we've all done that. Okay, well, if you've ever done that, does the possibility exist that something you know now, your information might be incorrect or incomplete? And you'd go, well, Andy, of course, something I know now, my information might be incomplete. Okay, I agree. But the point is, we don't know what that is, do we? And we don't know how many subjects in our lives that may cover. See, there is a desire in each of us to accomplish to our potential, to achieve to our potential. We certainly want that for our children. And we sometimes obsess over our children achieving to their potential, they're performing to their potential. But we also have a misconception about how that happens, because a lot of times I believe that people think that if they're not performing their potential, then there's something we're missing. There's something that we're not getting. But the opposite is actually quite true, because the biggest danger to achieving our potential is not something we're missing. Because if there's something we're not getting, if there's something we're missing, we continue to search, we continue to question, we continue to read, we continue to listen. And so the biggest danger to achieving our potential is not something we don't know. The biggest danger to achieving our potential is what we know for sure. Because at that point, that's the point where we shut down our thought processes and move on to something else, rather than continuing to dig deeply toward the foundation of a subject.
See, that's an example of what we just talked about earlier, Andy. We say that we have a questions-based paradigm that we train our students in. And it actually comes along with that. I tell people, I said, it's not that I don't believe in truth. It's that I believe so much in truth, but I also believe in an eternal God where that truth is always bigger than we are, right? And so the problem is when you stop. And so in an answers-based paradigm, you have an answer and you're like, oh, that's it. That's all I need to know. And especially in a world where technology disrupts everything all the time, that's really dangerous, right? And so we train our students and say, look, we're in a questions-based paradigm where you're always asking a question, which gives you an answer, which puts you in a position to ask a better question, which yeah. I think is an excellent paradigm. We teach it a lot. And after having just heard that, I'm not entirely sure that I came up with it or if I just adapted it from what you said from something I read earlier. So I'm not sure exactly where that comes from.
The idea is incredibly sound, because things can be true and not be the truth.
Yes.
And so that's what you're talking about, an answers-based paradigm where people will, some of the toughest clients that I have to deal with are people who are already in first place, because they're looking around, nobody's doing better than them. The answers they've gotten are true. They're working, they're producing. And so I have to somehow convince some of these people that you could produce at twice or three times the rate you're producing now. But, you know, because you're just dealing with what's true. You know, the truth connotes a foundation. The truth is like the best. It's one thing. I mean, there can be different categories, but if you're talking about the best, we're not talking about some of the best or among the best of the decade. We said the best. That's one thing. The truth. That's one thing. There can be different categories, but in every category, that's one thing. There's a curious correlation between the truth and the best, and that is that you can find the truth and just sit on it or be lazy or be foolish. You can find the truth and do nothing and never accomplish the best. But if you want to accomplish the best, you'll never do it without the truth.
I think that there's so many times you have people that in the pursuit of the best think that any shortcut will get them there, right? And almost always that comes with losing the truth. So well, I want to move on to something in a minute, but before we stop on the autobiographical part here, you know, we have a lot of students who are in our writing tracks and are really, I think we've got a lot of talented authors. We've got kids that are very interested in that.
I've met a bunch of them.
Yeah, that's right. You've got some experience with some of them. And there's always that gap, you know, between like, I want to write, and then there's a pretty big jump to the whole publishing thing. I'm curious. I mean, obviously there's some struggles to go through that. I don't know if you've had Jack Carr on your podcast yet, but I know you know who that is.
Twice.
Okay. I was pretty sure I'd heard him. I've heard him. Jack Carr gets around, so I hear him on a lot of podcasts. I was like, I think I heard him on Andy's podcast. He's always a little frustrated because, like, I wanted to be a SEAL. I was a SEAL. I wanted to be a writer. I was a writer. I wanted to do a movie. I got, you know, I wanted Chris Pratt to do it, and he did it. And it's like, you know, it's like, well, that's fantastic. And I call that fighter pilot syndrome, you know, where, and I don't know that Jack Carr does this, but, you know, where somebody says, hey, if you just follow your dreams, you can do whatever you want. And you're like, well, yeah, you happened to graduate first in Annapolis. And when you graduated, they needed F-18 pilots and you just happened to be there. But there's a lot of people that work really hard and that's not always possible. So what was it that kind of triggered that gap for you in that you're reading these biographies, you're moving up in the world? What made you go, you know what? I want to try this author thing. Because I know, and you know, folks, you should go read his stories and his books, listen to the podcast. There's a crazy story about getting his first book published. But what made you want to do that? What was the incentive that said, you know, I want to be an author? That's the part that I'm curious about.
To be honest with you, Jonathan, I never really wanted to be an author. And I still don't really like to write. I reached a point in my life where I wanted to be the best that God had created me to be. You know, not to be the best author or be the best speaker or be the best whatever. I just wanted to fulfill my potential before God. And so I got to a point where, you know, I had had certain things I was going after and I was trying to make happen. I finally got to a point where I said, you know, God, you've given me some gifts, and they're very odd gifts. You've given me the gift to be able to see a parallel on something, to determine context. You've given me a gift to be able to think through some things and to bring humor out of things. And for whatever reason, God, you've also given me the ability to write. You know, when I was in high school, Jonathan, I could not do that diagramming sentences thing, you know, where you're picking out the object and the predicate and the indirect object and the object of this. And I, you know, and I could not do that. I mean, I don't know why, but I remember my senior English teacher telling me, you're going to have real problems in college because it's all composition. And so I didn't know what to do about it. She didn't know what to do about it. But he was like, almost like I had some blank. But I'll tell you this, I've still got that blank. I still can't do it. But when I went to freshman English, you know, at college, which typically everybody failed or made C's or D's in, I made A's. I didn't know why it was right, but I could write correctly. And so I knew. That's just a God thing. There's nothing I did. There's nothing I figured out. I can do it. And I said, I started praying, you know, God, help me to understand things you want your people to understand. That if they did understand, they would live the lives you want them to live, which means they would have a relationship with you, and they wouldn't need to go to Oprah or the government or to me. They would have a direct correspondence and a direct relationship with you. And so help me understand things you want people to understand. And Lord, give me simple ways to explain complicated things that are confusing people. And so I feel like God honored that prayer. Now, I got to tell you, it's still, writing is a discipline to me, because people say, oh, you must just love being a writer. Well, I love being a writer because I love giving books to people, and I love talking about books, and I love thinking about books, and I love signing books. I love making my living with books. But do I like writing books? No. I mean, every time I sit down in front of the computer, there's only 50 things I can think of I'd rather be doing. And so I have to discipline myself to write. I've been given a gift to be able to do it, but it's like mowing a lawn to me.
Is your high school senior's final year feeling overwhelming? You want them prepared, but without all the extra pressure. That's where Explore by Unbound comes in. Explore gives students coaching, hands-on projects, and courses in life and study skills, plus Christian worldview training and optional dual credit. They'll graduate with confidence, resilience, and clarity about their next steps. Enrollment prices increase soon, so don't wait. Learn more at beunbound.us/explore.
There's a really fascinating point there, Andy, that I think is worth drawing out, is that when you said that you weren't really drawn to being a writer for the sake of being a writer, you were just seeking to live out the calling that God had given you in whatever way that turned out. And I think that is a real encouragement. That could be a real encouragement for especially the parents of a lot of young people who might be listening to this, because that's a very common misconception for a lot of young people, is that I have to be able to find the thing that I really want to be able to do, and all the stars have to align. And Jonathan, the way you put it one time is I have to be able to be hit by passion lightning, and I have to be able to go into a career and do all of these things. But
you're exactly right, because it's an odd thing. I talk to parents a lot of times who are desperately concerned about their children, that their children are, you know, somehow not fitting into a mold that would allow them the opportunity to go into an employment position or something. And I looked at it like this. I said, God, I know that I fight against your will. I know I do. Because even when I pray, I'm like, God, I want your will to be done. I want your will to be done. And then I'll get up and go, but don't touch my kids. Because if you touch my kids, you're going to have a problem. And, you know, or I'll be like, God, I want your will to be done. You know, your will, whatever your will for my life is, Lord, your will. Amen. And I would also like a boat. Sometime before I die, God, your will and a boat. Because if I could have a boat, your will would be so great. And so I knew that I fought against that. And then Psalm 119 somewhere, I think David says, God, help me to want your will so I can follow your will more closely. And I thought, wow, David didn't even want God's will. And he was a man after God's own heart. But he was smart enough, wise enough to say, God, help me to want your will so that I can follow your will. And so the thing that occurs to me and occurred to me is that is there any way? I mean, the things that we can imagine as the best house to live in, or the best way to live, or the best thing. I mean, is there any other way? I mean, who has a better imagination, us or God? Probably God, okay? And so when we're imagining the best for us and God is imagining his best for us, how big is that gap? And so why should I insist on my best? Why should I insist on what I imagine to be the best just because I don't know what God is imagining his best for me is? And so my thought is there would be no happier life than to be existing in God's will. And so somehow I got to give up that thought of what college degree says you have to do this and how you have to become this and what you do this. And if I am faithful to listen to God and follow his promptings and be humble in my approach, you know, nothing could be better than living in God's will. And just because I don't happen to know what his best for my life is tomorrow, I'm fine today. I'm good today.
There's a huge kind of truth encapsulated in that. I just had a conversation with a friend over break, actually, and we were walking, and I said, you know, I feel like there's a constant struggle with this balance of wanting more, being ambitious and dreaming and doing those things. And that's great. And that keeps us from stopping and sort of, you know, there's always a desire to press forward. And yet saying at the same time, and Lord, if this is all there was, I'm very happy. And there's something that's difficult there, but there's also something awesome. And I can say that, well, I certainly do not exist that way all the time. I also can say that there are places where, you know, I get up in the morning and I think, I've got 27 things that are just really big ideas that I'm really excited about. And yet I look around, I pick up a little kid, you know, I watch a bigger kid and I go, it's pretty fantastic right now. And we talk about that a lot, even with Unbound, is that, you know, we dream about all these things and we also dream about times when we don't have so many problems of, you know, this challenge or that challenge or the next challenge. And there's also times when we go to an event and I just look around and I think, wow, just the ability to sort of sit and to enjoy that. So, yeah. Well, Andy, when we met you, we came down to Gulf Shores. You were gracious and came and spoke at our event for us. And then you invited some of us back. And you actually, it was prompted by an interesting question. And I can't remember how this got set up. But you spoke. We had somebody, one of our students in our audience, Andrew Chen, if you listen, I know you asked this question. And it was something about how do you prepare for or for revival or for renewal. Or it was a question that sort of led into that. And you gave a great answer there. And then you said to me, can you bring your team to my office? Because I have a wider answer for that. And so you gave us that answer, and included with that was an effort that you are a part of. So folks, you know, we'll have this in the show notes, but you should go to Andy Andrews' website. You should definitely buy his books, which you can find all kinds of places. But you should also learn about something called Wisdom Harbor. And in our conversation, you kind of introduced us to Wisdom Harbor and said, this is one way that I'm setting the ground for that. Can you repeat some of that conversation? Because that has stuck with me ever since. I've thought about that a lot. I'd like for our audience to know about Wisdom Harbor, but I'd also like to know about that kind of idea that you had behind Wisdom Harbor.
Yeah, wisdomharbor.com is an online, it's a streaming service that is extremely affordable, that is being used with schools. It's being used in a lot of homeschool situations and with a lot of families. And our stated goal is to create America's next greatest generation by creating conversations between adults and younger people. And so it's hard to describe what it has become, because it's become this massive presence that has history and English and science and biology and health and culinary arts and music and writing, and it just, I mean, there are 20 different docks. Every harbor has a dock or two, and so Wisdom Harbor has 20 docks, and you can get on to explore the different topics, and they're presented in, you know, fascinating ways. A lot of the history is presented in a format called Bet You Didn't Know. And then we got a new, I don't know if you've seen the new game show, and it's kind of a take on the true or false kind of thing where we use history or some current events, and we'll look right into the camera and tell a story, and you have to determine, is that true or is that false? Is that real or is that not real? And so it creates, it's a dynamic way of learning things. But in Wisdom Harbor, we have, it's a character-based learning model. And we find things that we're able to present that are not in schools and they're not in societal culture, a lot of times because of being left out on purpose. One of my greatest examples is on the audiobooks dock at Wisdom Harbor. We take some old classics and we re-record them, but we re-record them in more modern language. Just, it doesn't change the story at all, but it changes that you can actually hear it, that you can actually listen to it. And one of those that we did was Robinson Crusoe, the book Robinson Crusoe. And everybody feels like they know that story just because Robinson Crusoe is like a famous story. It was written in 1617, I think. And there have been a bunch of movies, and everybody feels like they know the story. But until you've read the book or heard the book read to you, you don't know the story of Robinson Crusoe. And that book was actually responsible for a great awakening in Europe. And it was used as a fictional account of a guy who ran away from home against his parents' wishes, went to sea, ended up on a desert island. He was an atheist, and he saved a Bible because it was the only book that made it through being, you know, drenched. But for 7 years didn't look at the Bible, but got to a point on that island where he was so despondent that he opened it one day, and you know, Robinson Crusoe is written as a diary. It's written all in first person. And he says in there, I opened up that Bible and I put my finger down, and I can't remember exactly which verse it is, but he says, at that moment I knew there was a God. I knew he was here with me, and I knew there was a purpose for me being on this island. And so the whole story evolves from that to the point of when Friday, his man Friday, when he saves the guy from the cannibals, he and Friday can't speak to each other. They speak different languages. And after several years, they are coming to be able to communicate. And in the book, it says, I sent Friday to the other side of the island one day because I wanted to be alone with the Holy Spirit, to ask, how can I explain to Friday that Jesus died on the cross to save Friday? And so Friday comes back, and Robinson leads Friday to Christ, and then they're eventually saved, and they go into England, and Friday's talking to the black people, and Robinson's talking to the white people. Well, that book was the first massive bestseller ever in Europe. And that was a book that prompted the Great Awakening. Well, that fact has been totally forgotten. And now Robinson Crusoe through Wisdom Harbor is in the libraries and schools, being listened to by families. And so then there's, you know, Jimmy Erie, we have contributors who are Grammy winners and comedians and CEOs and coaches and chefs and teachers. And so these people, these contributors that deliver this, the stuff, deliver the topics and material are incredibly funny, incredibly interesting. And one of them is Jimmy Erie, who is a very successful songwriter. He's had 3 Song of the Years, 14 number one hits. He's the one who wrote I Drive Your Truck. He wrote I Called Mama for Tim McGraw. And so Jimmy gives guitar lessons on Wisdom Harbor. And they're like 10 minute, and they just follow a process. And so there's 20 something of them on there right now. We release one about every 6 or 7 weeks. And so there are people all over the world learning guitar from Jimmy Erie on Wisdom Harbor. And it's I think like starts at $27 a year for the whole shebang. And so I would really, really urge you to make that as a de facto gift to some families that you know and to some school situations that you know, and to make sure that your family has that in common. You know, if you're a grandparent, make sure that your children and grandchildren have access to that and that you guys are watching, because the content barges come in on Wednesday and Saturday. And so we're always fascinated at how these things create conversations. And that's what we're wanting to do, because kids and adults don't have a lot to talk about together anymore. And so we're making dinner table talk cool again.
Well, I would describe it to the audience and say, you know, think of something that has the depth of YouTube almost. I mean, obviously it's not that much content, but there's more content that you're going to sit down and watch in an evening if all that content was the stuff that you would be delighted for your children to watch and it was produced at sort of the highest level production value. This is not an amateur night where somebody stuck up a cell phone and said a couple of things. Every piece of content on Wisdom Harbor is done by people who are obviously professionals. And that we have a guy that has worked for us as a filmmaker and now does still contracts with us and does some of our films. And he teaches our filmmaking track for Unbound. And what he attempts to teach his students is to be able to produce films with undistracting excellence. And so when I say the high production values, you say, well, whatever. Yeah, that means that you can then spend all your time concentrating on Robinson Crusoe. You can spend all your time concentrating on the stuff that's being said, and you're not going to get distracted because you're like, what is that reflection over there? What is that shadow over there? And so all of it just ends up being a really phenomenal, I think, treasure trove of content. And Andy, I appreciate you saying that here, and I would just commend to our audience, we actually have some of our students use it for different things, and
one of your students, Briley Crisafi, has become a very valuable contributor to us. She performs and writes several pieces on here. You can see Briley on the Betcha Didn't Know doc, on the Salty Mug doc, and I think on the In Other Words doc. But yeah, she's a great part of this.
We'd love to say we taught her everything that she knows, but that's not entirely true. So actually, we've had Briley as a guest on this podcast, so you guys can go back if you're interested in Briley and hear about that. So, well, Andy, thank you so much for coming on here. Thank you for your unknown influence on all of us here at Unbound, and now your more known stuff. Unbound students read your books. We have some courses that we're getting ready to roll out to especially our high school students that feature Andy prominently and his content. And if you are unfamiliar with Andy Andrews, go to andyandrews.com, go to wisdomharbor.com, look up his books. You can check them out of the library, but better if you buy them, because you're going to want to keep them. And like I said, I did read them from the library, and then I bought every single one of them. And I have a couple sets of shelves dedicated just to Andy Andrews materials, and I would commend that to our audience as well. So thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you being a guest on the show.
Buddy, thank you. And if any of your listeners are business owners or corporate leaders, check out yourcmr.com, yourcmr.com. It's a coaching company called Creating Measurable Results that we use to help companies. And so just check that out, yourcmr.com.
And then you have the same problem I do. You have all these great ideas and you won't know if it came from you or if it came from listening to Andy. But, you know, after a while, you can just claim them as your own. And Andy,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've told you, Jonathan, you know, the first time you use something of mine, you just say, you know, it's like Andy Andrews always says, yep. And then the second time you use it, you say, you know, it's like a good friend of mine always says. And then the third time you use it, you say, it's like I always say.
Yeah. I found that that works better if you actually forget who said in the first place. Otherwise, there's just enough of a twinge of conscience. I cannot quite get away with it and make it look authentic. But I'm working on it. Say it enough times, it'll work. So,
hey, buddy, I sure do appreciate you and the Holo and Bound team. And thank you for the opportunity to join you here today.
Thanks for being here. We really appreciate it, Andy. You have a great day. We hope you enjoyed hearing from Andy Andrews once again. I actually just was speaking to Andy recently and was reminded of how much of a professional noticer he is. He was helping me with a question that I had, provided a lot of inspiration. And honestly, I called him feeling a little miserable about life and I hung up feeling a lot better about life. And honestly, having somebody like that you can call and talk to is a pretty huge asset and something to think about in this time of rejoicing and this Christmas season of giving thanks and being grateful for the gifts that we've been given. And so not the least of which is people like Andy Andrews, who share their wisdom with lots of people and has been gracious to share a lot of that with us. And so we hope you enjoyed hearing from him again. And we also hope that you have a wonderful and Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year. And just one last little thing as we're finishing out here. If you're still thinking about Unbound, especially if you're thinking about our Ascend program or one of our high school programs, just know that there is a difference in pricing between the end of the year and the beginning of the year. We do that for a lot of reasons, including some business reasons that are boring to go into right now. But for you, the reason you need to know is that if you want to enroll in Unbound for next fall, enrolling now before January 1st will be better than enrolling after. And if that is something you want to do, even though it's Christmas break, we do have an ear out to our phones and to our social media. And so give us a call or get in touch with us. Trent or Caleb would be happy to call you back and answer some of your questions. And if you still want to get enrolled before the new year, we'd be happy to help you do that. Until we talk again, Merry Christmas and be Unbound.
My name is Micaiah McClellan, and I am a Foundations alumni. That is quite a mouthful. So I did Ascend last year, and I am actually enrolled this year as a Challenge student, which is the Year 2 program. And I'm here to tell you what the results are based off of my own experience and how I did Ascend and what that impacted and how that really honestly changed my life and the trajectory of where I was going. When I enrolled last year in Ascend, I had no idea what I was getting myself into. And I mean that in the best sense. I had no sense of direction. I was very lost. I didn't have a good base on which to lay a foundation on. Hence the name Foundation Student. That was not on purpose. I really didn't though, and I was very lost, and I was struggling to find a community that I wanted to be in. I never wanted to go to college. That was never something that I desired. The campus life is definitely not for me, and I just had absolutely no clue what I was going to do. I quite literally stumbled onto Unbound, and I enrolled late in the semester. So I actually went to Apex, which is our first event of the year, not knowing anything about anything. And come to find out, after that week had gone by, I loved it so much that I couldn't imagine my life without these people in it. I received so much love and a sense of direction and a sense of hope. And that really gave starter to the fire of where I needed to go. I enrolled late, like I said, and I started off the year kind of understanding what I was doing. Not really. I kind of had a lot of things going on, a lot on me all at once. But it was one of the best decisions I could have made. So if you're thinking about enrolling in Ascend, I say do it. And especially if you don't actually have a direction, or if you don't even know what next year is going to look like, it is going to give you a vision for the year. It is going to give you a goal to pursue. You're going to learn so much that you can actually apply to your life. A lot of what they teach out there nowadays is garbage. You're not going to use it in real life. And the skills that you learn with Ascend are going to be impacting your life for years to come. I learned things from last semester that I still apply to this day. The leadership classes that they teach are so impactful, and I couldn't recommend it more. I know that it could be scary. For me, it was. And I pray that the Lord would guide whatever decision you're going to make. But if you're not sure what this year is going to look like, and if you need a sense of direction, and you want something that is going to challenge you and also push you to grow closer to the Lord and give really good results, I think Ascend is an excellent option for that, and I hope that you enroll. Yeah. Bye.